Welcome to the Fathers of the Future podcast. I am joined today by Mr. Andre Wadsworth. Welcome to the show, my brother.
Well, thank you for having me, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, as we stared at each other going, hey, when did we first meet? How do we know each other? Well, let's take it back just a couple weeks. We ran into each other at the local gas station.
Yeah.
And you were with your daughter,
mm-hmm.
and I was with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got done running a 5-mile loop with the American flag mm-hmm. and actually paying it back forward to the people that work there. You know, some really great group of guys that mm-hmm. have supported me, you know, running for the past couple hundred days, the hardest 100 days of our lives, right? And I saw you and, you know, you were like, what's going on? How you doing? And I said, hey, I've been meaning to get a hold of you. I would love to have you on this podcast, knowing mm-hmm. you're a father of four.
Mm-hmm.
You got four girls.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what that journey is like right off the bat.
You know, people always say, oh, you do. You wish you had a boy. And I it's not like a desire that people think that you would have. I think in perspective, you know, I come from a family of seven. Really, you know that you're just thankful for healthy kids. And I wouldn't change anything. And so I could tell you it makes you more patient. It makes you, you know, really just have a lot more concern and listening. And it makes you more versatile because every last one of them are totally different.
And you got ages from 9 to 16. So
yes.
You're fully in.
Yes. It. Oh, yeah. Two teenagers, almost, and then we have one turning another. So I almost have three teenagers in the house coming up soon.
And what are the mornings like? Is it a little bit of chaos?
Man, the one thing about it, it depends. There's no more school, but man, our girls are just, they've been always late sleepers. And so they don't get up, you know, if I don't have to, you know, we don't have to go anywhere, they don't have to go to school, they don't wake up till at least 10:30, 11, sometimes 1 o'clock. They were like that as babies too. They were never like when people say, oh, our kids wake up at 6 or 7, right? Not mine. we always, it's always brunch or lunch. It's never breakfast. So
who sleeps the latest out of the four? Which age?
I would say my 15-year-old probably sleeps the latest.
Yeah, that's how it is in our house. Our girl's 18 months younger and she won't get out of bed.
Yeah.
So on the precast, we talked about this last 100 days and you know, very stoically you said, you know, I look back at my life and winning a national championship with Florida
mm-hmm.
State,
mm-hmm.
getting drafted, losing my father,
mm-hmm.
nothing had prepared me for this year.
Yeah.
Walk us through the precursors, those three pieces. You said you're one of seven?
Yeah, one of seven.
Where do you fit?
I'm the baby of the family.
Which is why your dad had you at 50?
Yeah, well, there are only one whole sister, as a sense of, with my dad, and then the rest are my half-brothers and half-sisters. It's, you know, from this year, from obviously the coronavirus, and then also what's going on socially with, you know, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, just all that's just been going on and just thrown in the forefront. You know, coronavirus comes with, you know, kids schooling, their club sports being stopped, just the volatility of the world, just seeing how politics always played a big thing, but how everything's so politically driven. Then also now everybody's looking for answers spiritually, that thing. And then, you know, also in the last, you know, for me, 18 months going through a divorce that I never thought I would go through, but, you know, so it's just everything. It's just been a very monumental year in the last 18 months of just very surreal, as time goes on.
So as a very faith-driven man, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, but yesterday we were in Sedona for my daughter's 12th birthday.
Yes.
And my wife and I are walking to go get coffee, and she's inundated with this. She's in the commercial real estate shopping center business, so she's mm-hmm. up to date with every post that comes out. And she says, God, 2020 is absolutely terrible. And I stopped her, and I'm very optimistic.
I'm me too.
Right? Very positive as much as I can. And I said, look at how much we have. If we buy into that, then for the rest of the year, we're set. This is the worst year ever. And that's all we can do is just play that game. Or we can look at everything we have with gratitude and be so positive that, you know what, we are alive and that we have our health and we have our family. And although it sucks, right? There's a lot of things that suck about it. Let's look at it as this is a great year. Because I'm sure it could be worse for all of us.
Yes.
Right? How do you stay that positive when it comes to your girls and your family this year?
Well, I would say I hold, the Bible talks about holding every thought captive. And when I look at those things, I'm like you in the same thing. But what I've learned about myself also in the last 18 months is that I need to be more present in the standpoint of understanding when you're going through bad times, because that was me. I was like, you know, I could be going through a bad time, recognize, but really not sit in what's going on. Because I think it's also good to say, take that in and really say, okay, yeah, this is bad, but look at all the good stuff. But instead of like automatically go to the good stuff, because that's the way I am of doing that. And it's good to sit in to know, okay, this is a bad situation. Because when you do that, then you could be more empathetic of what other people are going through that try it, that sit there, because then you'll probably discredit or not try to feel the pain of what they're actually going through and understanding, if that makes any sense. Because it's not always about you. It's all about other people too. So you can meet them where they're at and then pull them out of it. And so you're exactly right. Like when I look at that, it's, I can name 100 things. I got to spend more time with the girls. You know, it just, we played more board games. We played, did more stuff, got them to talk about what's going on. Just what they, you know, they pay attention to the news. Not only that, you know, my girls are great. They don't, you know, they make great grades. I never have to, they don't lie. They're never, if they do, it's probably little, I don't know, but the worst part that I have with them is picking up their clothes or them being lazy or just me being, you know, living in Scottsdale, Arizona and dealing with, you know, what this kid has and doesn't have and what they want, you know, they want their nails done, their eyelashes done, eyebrows done every week. You know, those are the things of trying to keep them grounded and being a dad, not trying to spoil them at the same time. And so there's so many positive things, you know, like you said, our health, all those different things. But, you know, and the same thing, you know, there were some bad things as well. But overall, you got to make sure people realize, don't discredit the bad things, because that's what brings value of when you get through it. And then you even appreciate it even more of like how many of the good things that you have, because things become more cemented in when it says, hey, we made it through this. We made it through that. We made it through this. And, you know, I go back to when we did mat drills in college, these tough drills. And we would be playing in a game and be dog tired. And we'd look at each other and say, we made it through mat drills together. And then you get like a boost of energy. But if you never discredit the pain that you went through at that time, would you get that enough energy to push through another difficult moment? And so that's what we learned.
It's obviously been hard, but you know, any type of separation or divorce is challenging.
Oh, it's a death. It's death.
How have you had any reflective moments in that? Have you been able to look at that as 17 years of
it was 19.
19?
Well, it ended up being 20 until the day it was final, but really it was probably 18 that were not separated. But what was the question?
The question is, how do you remain so positive in that, especially with your girls?
It's still a process. It's still painful. It's still, I think what allows me to get through is that I've always had good mentors. I've always had good people. I've always was transparent. I've always was holding on to that. You know, I have relationships from over 20 years, you know, when they heard the news, I had a pastor and his wife fly into town and stay with me for a week. You know, that's the kind of relationships that I have, you know, with that, you know, and, you know, my relationship with my mother is even closer. My relationship with my mother-in-law is closer, you know, our relationship with my sister-in-law and brother-in-law are closer. So it's those type of things, you know, you hold on to those relationships to make sure, you know, like I said before, is about not make sure you're not disqualifying yourself. Because when you go through something traumatic, you tend to go out of character. And so I try my best to stay in character. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I did a decent job.
Okay, so let's talk about football here just for a quick sec. Florida State, national championship. Yeah. You had some pretty big names on that team, including yourself. Uh-huh. Peter Wark, Sebastian Janikowski, Chris Wanky.
Yeah.
Was it just an absolute place for winning? Was it just a mindset?
Oh, yeah. We had, you know, Charlie Ward, Wark done, Derek Brooks, just keep on. You know, it goes back to another thing that was played a big key in my life was Coach Bowden was a strong believer. And the way he treated us like his sons. And he, you know, he made it to a point that he gave us three churches. We visited as a team. It wasn't mandatory, but he wanted us to go to church on Sunday. And before the season would start, he would take us to three different churches to see which church would best suit us individually. And certain churches and hopefully go to those churches on Sunday because we had nothing to do on Sunday mornings after we play on Saturday. But like I said, the winning attitude, the environment, the work ethic was all part of it and still is with me today, even from my coaches in middle school to high school, all the way through.
And that process from college to pros, you were drafted third overall in 1998.
Yeah.
As we know, that draft is a pretty infamous one.
Yeah.
You've got Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Andre Wadsworth.
Yes.
What was that like for you at that time?
It was great. It was one of those things I never thought. I loved the moment. It's a big accomplishment and it's a platform. I've always looked at the opportunity that God's blessed you with, the platform, and hopefully I didn't squander it because it's always bigger than football. You know, your life is always bigger than what you do. It should encompass a lot more than just yourself. And so I was able to help, you know, start ministries, outreaches, nonprofits, you know, just be that and just try to enjoy the time and still enjoying, you know, what that platform brings, even though, you know, injury happened and I didn't play 15 years and go to the Pro Bowl like I wanted to, you know, but I knew sports would have that, you know. I ended up having 17 surgeries total, you know, in an 8-year, you know, span. You know, and it's weird considering I never got injured in college, and then about a second year in the pros, I'm getting beat up. But it was a fun experience, and it still is a good experience to this day.
You've always been in faith since you were a young man. Your father instilled that on you.
Yeah.
When did you get into the business, or at least when did you get into this part of your life?
I would say I was always in it, even in college, because I helped. We were at a church plant in college, and then me and my roommate would actually drive to the early stages of another church plant in Jacksonville when the Jaguars just became a franchise, and we'd go to Tony Baselli and Mark Brunell's house, and they were young guys in the faith, and we were part of the same ministry, and we would drive to their Bible studies that were turning into a church. And so I think it started there, and then when I got drafted here, and then when Peter got drafted to Baltimore, he was doing Bible studies up there with his teammates, and I started Bible studies here with my teammates by my first year, and it just kept on growing. And then eventually, after about almost four years here, that's how we started. Hey, maybe we should do a church. So that's how it started.
And what year was that?
April 15, 2001 is our official like church day.
And we are actually sitting in one of the rooms at Impact Church right now. You guys are moving into a new building.
Yes.
Massive building on Scottsdale.
It's 2.5 times bigger than where we're at now. So it's massive for us now.
Yeah. So this is not only something that you're doing right now, but this is a part of who you are. Mm-hmm. This is a part of your life. And if you go back to some of those football days when you're in your career and you're playing at that high level, if you look at football, as you know from other sports, why does football have such a high level of faith versus some of the other sports? I remember having a conversation with my son about, you know, kneeling and praying before a football game. You don't see that in a lot of other sports.
I talk about it with Pastor Travis, who's the senior pastor of Impact Church. And we talk about it because every sport's different. Baseball, professional baseball is different. Basketball is totally different. And then hockey is totally different. I really think it has to do with the team aspect and the aggression of the sport. Because I would say, even though the faith level is not high in hockey, but the guy's humility is very equal to the same humility as football players. I think because, you know, you're wearing a helmet, not everyone sees you. I think there's a bigger group of guys, and it's a pretty violent sport. And I think that has a lot to do with trust, camaraderie, team, and doing with that. So it lends to itself to be a lot more coachable. I'm not saying those other sports are not, but I think baseball is a very individual. Basketball is very individual, even though it's a team sport. But there's a lot of individual play in those sports that you have. So, if no one's blocking for Tom Brady, it's over. He's done. He might get destroyed the next play and they won't play again. Where a guy like Michael Jordan could take over a game, or Kobe, and without anybody says, just give me the ball, I'm gonna score. And baseball, it's just a pitcher and the guy at the plate, you know? And so they're still a team sport, but there's a lot of more individual play.
There's more faith in this game because you got to rely on other people.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah. But there's a lot of faith in those other sports, especially baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball is a very tough sport.
So this last Sunday, my daughter and I watched on Impact Church live online a very powerful Sunday service.
Yes.
It was titled Let's Talk About It. And it was with Pastor Travis, Phoenix Suns head coach Monty Williams, former client friend of mine, Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Penzone, and you. And what was amazing about it was how deep you guys went, right? And it was a true conversation about black and white and racism in America and love and life. It was amazing. Who came up with the idea and the concept?
Actually, Pastor Travis came up with the idea and say, what he goes, what do you think about that? I said, man, that's a great idea. And so I championed that. And then after that, I said, and then he says, who do you think will be good for the panel? So we were throwing out names. And so he threw out Paul and I threw out Monty. And I thought that would be a good panel. And lucky thing that they all could have, you know, their schedules would permit it to get it done. Cause it's tough to get everyone all in the same time cause everybody's so busy. And so that's how it went down pertaining to that. I thought the conversation was very, very good and real because he didn't preload us, and that's what was done on purpose. Most of those things, people are preloaded with questions. And if you saw that it was very, when people were asked a question, they took a pause to think about it because no one knew what the questions were. And I think that's what gave it a lot of authenticity and something that was really real that people can feel and translate. And I think also another thing about that particular setting is that, you know, all of us, believe it or not, on a stage has a black child. People don't know that, or a child of the opposite race as well. Besides, I don't have a white child, but Monty had a stepchild that's white. And then Pastor Travis has an adopted black child. And then also Sheriff Paul Penzone has a black stepson. And so there is a lot of understanding, and still having that diversity was really good on that standpoint, and trying to meet where everybody's at. Because if it was an all black panel, I think it would come off too strong, then not everybody would understand, because we understand. And where I think where the country is now, I think people are really getting to understand, and people are taking time to understand more so than I've ever seen before. I think it just caused a lot of pause. And I think it was a good start of where to start these things.
Yeah, there's a picture, and it's crazy. I actually screenshot it as I'm watching it with mm-hmm. my daughter, of the four of you guys on your knees praying.
Yeah.
And then the very next day, they replayed it, took a snapshot yeah. of it. You see a white pastor, you see two African-American men next to a white police chief.
Yes.
Sheriff with his uniform on. It's one of the heaviest pictures I've seen, man, and in a good way.
Oh, it's a good right? way.
Conversations to be had, mm-hmm. a lot of the unknowns.
Yeah.
As athletes, it doesn't. So this conversation I have with my wife, mm-hmm. she's like, I feel like there's more individual racism now than there was 2 months ago. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, I feel like I'm being forced to have to have a conversation about black or white, whereas I never had to before. Mm-hmm. It never crossed our minds before. For mm-hmm. us, our family, it never has.
Yeah.
It's never been that question. But then there's so many other people who are in that unknown, in that void of what to say, what to do. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of feel this, the business pressure of things.
Oh, yeah.
When you're seeing that kind of unfold. Yeah. What are you telling the girls throughout this? That's what matters to me most.
You know, what I'm telling the girls is, like, I just say, what are you feeling? Because obviously they think things totally different than they think. And it's been, I let them come to me with the thought process. I open the door for them, and, you know, and it's a lot for them, because they see it, but they don't understand it totally, but they know that it happens, because they go to a private school, and, you know, usually my daughters are one of maybe three other African-American girls in the school. And so they get those questions of not understanding when they talk about their hair or their skin color, or like Pastor Travis talked about, say, pass the you know, the flesh color crayon. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that flesh color is like, that could be, what is that? Right. You know, that could be dark brown, or it could be peach. It could be all the different things. Like, and so it's one of those tough things. I think the toughest conversation, and it was a very tough conversation. We didn't ever got to the end of it, but they asked me, we were driving home on a Sunday. It's when they closed one of the malls down Scottsdale Quarter early. And they are on social media, on Instagram, and they saw that the rioting or looting is going to go to the gated communities. And they said, you know, one of the statements were, they're going to come, black men are going to come in the neighborhoods and rape white women. And they were like, like, why would they say that of all mm-hmm. things? Like, they don't even know where that comes from. And, you know, obviously I've heard that all through growing up, but to them, they're like, why are people saying that? Right. And those are the things that you gotta talk about. That's part of what all this is going on, to bring awareness. And to answer your question a little bit about what your wife is asking, and that's the problem. Like, the way I would approach your wife on that is that, because she's not, and I get it, like, it's not a big issue. But I would humbly ask this, because I have a lot of people that are not racist, or that doesn't matter about color, but can they empathize with the understanding of, like, yeah, you never think of it, but you ever think about, you know, when I walk into an elevator, even though she wouldn't feel like it, but I walk into an elevator and, you know, white ladies will hold on to their purse tighter or move further away. Or I'd get pulled over multiple times because I'm never thinking about that and saying, wow, I never thought of what you have to go through on a continual basis, just being judged off your skin. And I think that she probably would never even think about that. So I think for her, I think only thing that I think it would be good for her is to understand that's what needs to stop and understand, even though she doesn't have, she's not the one that's profiling or moving in the elevator, but she has to understand that that happens on a routine basis just because instantly. And those people that usually do it are not racist. It's just that they grew up a certain way to somehow either fear or understand that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So how do we solve?
Dialogue, education.
Conversation 101.
I say dialogue, education, and empathy, like I said before.
Yeah.
The problem is that a lot of people react with pain. A lot of people act with, you know, aggression or just like with a lot of passion, and they put it on top instead of like, okay, how can I meet with someone where they're at so they can digest and understand? Just like your wife, you know, understanding that, you know, this is a situation like, well, I feel like I'm being forced. And it's like, no, I just want to know where you meet you at. And I think I could have met her at that one point instead of doing that. It's the same thing as like, I think, I mean, this is, you know, I might get ridiculed for this, but the word white privilege is to me is offensive because you're imposing something on someone that maybe had no cause or reason of why it's happening. And so they should change that, or if not change it, don't come out and say that, because like I said, you're imposing something that some people don't even know, and you're not meeting that person where they're at for them to understand. And so that's what I would say is just having, take a step back, empathy, and listen, both sides listen and say, how can I meet you where you're at? And so of getting to understand.
Do you think that it could be something as simple as education, like in kindergarten?
I think so.
Yeah.
I really do.
I'm sorry to interrupt you,
yes.
But I thought of this when it first came out is we're always about the solutions, not the problems. Uh-huh. We know the problems exist in everything, but I'm always like, okay, well, what about this? What about that? What if we did this? We're taught, there's a great book. I don't know if you remember it in the early 90s, maybe, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about, you know, washing mm-hmm. your hands, the golden rule, mm-hmm. smiling, doing onto others. As something as simple as, let's call it 10 color shaded icons.
Yeah.
10 with an equal sign in between everyone, right where you wash your hands.
Yeah.
Like, you know, propaganda exists in all of life and marketing, we know.
Yeah.
But think about if that's something you saw from the time you were in kindergarten.
Yeah.
To know that all these, we're all the same.
Yeah.
I love that video where it shows, you know, two kids, different colors, yeah. run up to each other and hug each other.
Yeah, they run, they see each other and they just run.
No one's ever born racist.
Yeah.
We learn that.
Yes, 100%.
So we can unlearn it.
Yeah. And I think it's not even so much racism, because to me, racism is hate and driving hate. I think most of it, you know, the words that you hear, systemic or systematic, it's because of like those two kids, they grow up of like the idea of like, I'm better than that person because they were put in slave because their skin's darker, or this, the slowly little implementing things of those type of things in their mindset, even though they're not racist, but there's like a negative connotation towards a certain race, let it be Hispanic or, you know, Asian or any of those type of things. Everybody has those, you know, ideologies of what they should be or what they shouldn't be because, you know, it's like, you know, I'm 6'4", 290. He has to be an athlete. Yeah, it could be a rocket scientist, you know what I mean? Or whatever it is, or that kind of a situation. It's just so tough because you grow up seeing all these those little things like that. And I think changing the education system, certain things, all those things play a part. It's a lot of little things. Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Hawaii, so Haole boy means white kid,
yeah,
white guy,
see?
Right? And but it taught me so much about culture, about, you know, because I may have been judged for my skin color, but it wasn't out of hate. What you see and what you hear from, you know, a lot of what's happening,
yeah.
to me, that's like what you said, the pure definition of racism. Versus, you know, versus one of my friends saying, you know, a joke. Yeah. And I don't mean a racist joke,
no.
But I mean a joke about, you know, being a Howley boy.
Yes.
Right. You know, I have a friend who's African-American, who's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he's got jokes for days and always has. And I said, are you going to let up on your jokes now that we are where we are? He said, no, you know, I'm not, because it makes people laugh. It makes people smile. Mm-hmm. There's so many layers, I think, of racism.
Yes.
That's what we're starting to see now, that maybe before there was only one.
Yeah.
We're peeling those away.
Yeah.
Were any of your girls scared or have been through?
Yeah, they were scared, especially with, you know, would they come in our house, all those different things, you know.
We got the same messages, the same text messages.
Those were all the things that they were scared of. And they were scared of those things.
Yeah.
But besides that, they were okay. And I try to reinforce that everything will be okay.
All right. So let's talk about Impact Church. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned earlier, Coach Bowden would say he would take you guys to a couple different churches and say, hey, pick one. We did that when we moved here.
Okay.
And it just so happened that, you know, our gym was a mile from here. So it worked out proximity wise, but we tested a couple others out right away. It was the vibe. Mm-hmm. It was the love. It was the music.
Yeah.
It was Pastor Travis. Mm-hmm. It was this collection that makes this place so special. Mm-hmm. It was colorful.
Yes. Yes.
Has it always been like that?
Yeah, here? I think one of the key things that make it what it is because neither Pastor Travis or I never thought of ourselves as pastors. I really, seriously, we don't, and we don't know, you know, some people aspire to be that. And so we never thought this. That makes it one thing. So we don't have a chip on our shoulder with that. And I think number two, I think us being both involved in athletics growing up and then me going professionally, that plays a lot into it as well. And we do things not as religious, I would say. I think we're try to be very authentic and make it enjoyable. You know, growing up church, everybody wore, like, you know, especially black churches, 3-piece suits and all that stuff. But, you know, our church is very relaxed. So you come as you are type deal. And I think people feel comfortable. And I always said this. When you go to a concert or a show or anything like that, you come with so much excitement and you're ready to receive. But when you go to like a church service, you come guarded. You want to make sure that you have the right clothes on. You say the right words. You look the certain part because you don't want to be judged. But if you go to a concert, you don't care who, you don't even think about being judged. You just go to cut loose. And that's why I wanted, like, for people to come to church and feel that way. Like, and I knew every year, if I'd get someone that's never been church that comes in here and after like 3 services, they'd come up to me, man, we really like this church, you know, and they'll say, oh, it's the effing bomb. and right there, just drop an F bomb or something like that. I thought that was cool. But the whole thing is that I'm hopeful as they keep on coming 6 months, a year, they start cleaning up their language or whatever vice they may have.
Yeah.
But the point is they felt comfortable that they can express who they are at that time because they were receiving everything that's there without all the obstacles of doing that. And that was the thing about it.
Yeah, Pastor Trav wearing the cutoff sleeve hoodie and Jordan's up on stage. It's like, I can dig this guy.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing we always tell people when we have friends in town and we do bring them, or even my father-in-law, who's the most diehard Catholic, Middle Eastern man you've ever met, you're going to like it. You know, that's really it. It's like, you're going to like it. You can come here regardless of how serious or lack of religious beliefs you have, and you're going to feel good when you leave here. You're taking this to center stage now. You're moving to a new location. Mm-hmm. How much bigger does this thing get now?
It's never about the numbers as a sense of, like, you're not in it for that. But it's also about the numbers, if that is, I don't want to say, because you want to impact and as many people as you possibly can community-wise for Christ. You want them to receive salvation. But it's up to God, whatever, you know, it ends up being. All we could do is be good stewards, make sure we stay true to our heart of God's word, and then and facilitate it in such a way that we can continue to grow and do the things necessary to help the community and you know, really impact everyone that comes inside the building.
Beautifully said. All right, this is the question that we ask everybody on the show, every father. It probably means even more just understanding your belief and your faith. If today were your last day on earth, what would you want this legacy of yours to be? What would you want your girls to know about you?
Wow, I didn't know you were going to ask that. That's a very deep...
Unpreloaded.
Oh my gosh. Actually, just you saying that makes me emotional. You know, it really does. What I want them to know that their dad loves them so much and wants them to love God's word, this, you know, far more than I love it, because I believe if they follow that, everything will be okay. And if I have that insurance of that, that Christ's love through me shows to them, and I'll do everything not for them to feel that pain, because God is the one that can heal all pain, do all the things, and keep them on the right track. That's what I'd want them to know.
Andre Wadsworth, father of the future here at Impact Church in Scottsdale, Arizona. I truly appreciate you for coming on the show and talking to us today and being vulnerable, man. It means a ton. It really does. And I hope that this light conversation was enough for some people to open up their understandability muscles and realize that we are all the same. We're all children of God, regardless of our color, our size,
yes.
or what we choose to like or to love. If you guys want to check out Impact Church, you can do so online. They broadcast all over the world, impactchurch.com.
Yes.
And
we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook Live, we go to our website. Yeah, we try to do a good job of that.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much. If you got a lot out of this, all we ask in return is that you pay this message forward, share it on your social media, send it to somebody in text or email. And if you have the opportunity, give us a 5-star rating review on Apple iTunes. Andre, thank you, my brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Luke.
Peace.
Peace.